Hello, this is Carl Weinschenk at the Daily Music Break. That's www.dailymusicbreak.com. We're very pleased today to be speaking with Scott Yanow. Scott is the author of many books on jazz. We're going to talk a little bit about Louis Armstrong. Good afternoon, Scott. How are you?
Hi, fine. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. That was a very brief introduction I gave, Scott, so please tell us some of the books you've written and perhaps what you're working on now and, how it's going for you.
Okay, sure. Well, I've been writing about jazz for quite some time, so I've written 11 books. The most recent one is called The Great Jazz Guitarist, and some of the other ones include The Jazz Singers, Jazz on Film, Jazz on Record, 1917 to 76, and a few others. And I write for 5 magazines these days. It always goes up and down, but right now it's at 5, which includes Downbeat and Jazz's, the Jazz Rag out of England, Jazz Inside from New York, and the Los Angeles jazz scene. And I do liner notes and always reviewing records and really having a good time just listening to the music and discovering new people.
Well, you really sound like you found a niche and you found a way to make a living doing what you obviously love. So that's a great story.
Well, I definitely enjoy it, and you know, the key to being a jazz writer is just don't lose your enthusiasm, and just always try to widen the audience, and just enjoy introducing people to music you haven't heard before.
Great, thank you for that introduction. Now, the subject at hand today is Louis Armstrong, and we can't really talk much about jazz without talking about Louis Armstrong. But let's start before Louis Armstrong, Scott. What was jazz before he came along and did whatever he ended up doing, which we'll obviously talk about, but what was jazz before that?
Well, jazz, you know, it's a little difficult discussing the first 20 years of it, say from the time Buddy Bolden started in 1895 until the first recordings in 1917, because although it was based in New Orleans and it was played throughout the South, and by 1910 or so it was starting to be introduced to different cities up north, none of it was recorded. So it wasn't until 1917 with the original Dixieland Jazz Band when you even have an idea what it sounded like. Mm-hmm. And very few black performers were recorded before 1923. The blues singers started to record in late 1920, but even then, you know, it really kind of exploded in 23 when such people as King Oliver with Louis Armstrong and Johnny Dodds and Bessie Smith and Sidney Bechet and a lot of other top performers finally started to record. Jazz before Louis Armstrong was kind of divided up because it was different in New Orleans than it was in Chicago, although Chicago was starting to be influenced by the New Orleans musicians who were moving up north. And a lot of the recordings were in New York, where they hadn't heard what was going on in Chicago with the King Oliver Band and with some of the other groups. So the music, say, before 1923 on record in New York, it's a kind of staccato phrasing. It's a little bit awkward at times, and not that many musicians really swung. I mean, Phil Napoleon with the original Memphis Five is one of the few, but in general, the music was, it was dance music, but the solos tended to have effects rather than tell the story, and the music itself was pretty ensemble-oriented. So it is quite a bit different than it would be 2 or 3 years later.
Well, that's obviously the next question. For our audience who aren't, you know, many of which aren't jazz experts, what is the essence of what Louis Armstrong did that was so special and ends up making him probably the most famous person ever in jazz and one of the most famous people in American history? What did Armstrong do?
Well, he was really a major innovator in 3 different areas. And the first area was on the trumpet, although he was playing cornet but became the trumpet by the mid-20s. But when he came to New York, he joined Fletcher Henderson's orchestra in 1924, and Henderson's band was considered the top big band in jazz, particularly compared to the other groups of the time, and they were filled with some of the top black musicians in New York, and they could read anything that was in front of them. But they also, and actually when Louis Armstrong first was hired for them and came to the first practice, they all, the musicians there, thinking they were so sophisticated, kind of looked down on him because he was wearing clothes that were a little out of date, and he had manners that were more country-oriented than city. But as soon as he played the trumpet, they knew that this was a giant. And the reason was is that he, in addition to having a beautiful sound on his horn and a wide range, he told a story in his solos. His solos had a beginning, middle, and end, and he had a purpose. And he used space dramatically. He wasn't, when it was time for his solos, he wasn't just playing double time and just trying to do a lot of different effects and odd sounds. He really told a story and put the blues into everything he played. So it was a very different way of playing than had been heard in New York up to that point.
Mm-hmm. So the difference really is when he soloed, it was a lyrical thing or something that built to something, as you say, told a story, as opposed to being almost like the sound effects in a silent movie or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, his music, he swung. In a way, you could really say he introduced swing to New York, and that might be a little bit oversimplification, but
right.
when he did that, within a year, a lot of other musicians in New York were sounding like him or being influenced by him,
mm-hmm.
by his swing, by his phrasing, you know, and just the blues that he put into his solos. Now, when he went back to Chicago and started recording with the Hot Five in late 1925 and did that for about 3 years, he also began to be heard as a singer. And mm-hmm. what was unusual about his singing was that he sang like a little bit like his trumpet playing, in that his phrasing was swinging and he put a lot of blues and he made every note count. So it's in a way, his singing was like his trumpet playing, and then his trumpet playing was voice-like. And that idea basically revolutionized jazz and popular music.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of the voice as an instrument was something that he was out ahead of.
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't just sing the straight melody or the straight
right.
words. You know, he scattered. He wasn't the first one to do it, but he was the one to popularize it. And scatting is really coming up with syllables,
right.
nonsense syllables, and just making sounds, you know, that sort of sounds like a horn.
Right.
And improvising while he was doing it. But even when he sang the words of a song, his phrasing was different. It made it swing. And
mm-hmm.
that was much, much better than most singers of that time period.
Mm-hmm. I had always heard that the beginning of West End blues was almost like, you know, the Ten Commandments of jazz, or the founding document, that people who are really experts look at the first 20 seconds or so of West End blues. Is that an oversimplification, or is there something to that?
Well, you know, it was a tremendous cadenza, which was the trumpet playing alone and at the very beginning of a recording, and that hadn't really been done in jazz or even popular music much before. And it's just every note fit perfectly. In fact, Louis Armstrong always considered West End blues to be his personal favorite of all his recordings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I will put that snippet at the beginning of this podcast before we start chatting as the intro. Now, was there a third way that he was revolutionary, Scott?
Well, the third way was had to do with just being a tremendous showman. He was a very entertaining. He was humorous. You could put him on stage with anybody, and he would steal the show. I mean, I've seen him with Bing Crosby, you know, on films, and Frank Sinatra, and
yeah.
opera singers, and he could be there with anyone, and you'd be looking at Louis Armstrong and just waiting for him to do something that's very funny. He loved to entertain. In fact, he spent a lot of years playing maybe 250 concerts a year, just traveling all over the world, and he didn't really need to after a while, because
right.
he did make a good amount of money, but he just loved to do that. And by doing this, he popularized jazz, and he popularized American music. And that's why he became the best-known of all jazz musicians and one of the best-known of all American entertainers. He was just very entertaining, and he was just fun.
Mm-hmm. How long was his greatest period of creativity?
Well, I've always felt a little different about this than a lot of other critics and a lot of other people who study Louis Armstrong's music. I mean, most of them will say, 1925, let's say, until the early 30s, and then
right.
after that period of time, he was leading a swinger or a big band, and then after about 1947, that's the year he formed the All-Stars, which was a sextet that he toured the world with for the remainder of his life. But I think his creativity was really his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, by the 50s, especially by the mid-50s, a lot of his solos were kind of worked out in advance. But still, there were always surprising moments when he would depart from it, and he played so great throughout the 50s. Technically, he might have been at his peak then. But even until the very end, you know, and he died in 1971, even until the end, he was always coming up with new ideas, and you would just love to hear him play, because every note just sounded wonderful.
So the final question, we've probably covered in bits and pieces in your terrific previous answers, but I'm wondering why Louis. It's funny, whenever I think of Louis Armstrong, I think of Albert Einstein, in that Einstein was obviously a genius and Armstrong was a genius, but they came about at a time when the timing was just right for them to make great breakthroughs, and they were in the company of other geniuses who were probably just as much geniuses as they were. But Einstein was the guy who came through and became the most famous, and Armstrong too. And I always wondered, you know, kind of why that is.
It was partly the timing. I mean, if he were born 10 years earlier, he wouldn't have been recorded during an early 10-year period in his career. But it was also the fact that he was just such a great entertainer that really helped him. I mean, why is he better known than, say, Red Allen or King Oliver even now, or any other trumpeter of his time period, much less someone like Coleman Hawkins, who wouldn't be known to the average person? It was just that if you saw him play, he loved to entertain, and he was very humorous, and he put on wonderful shows, and he did that for decades. And he was lucky enough to live to a decent life. He didn't die when he was 30.
Right.
So it all combined together that he did come around at the right time, but he also had the genius to really make such a major impact.
Right. And when you say die, you know, he lived a long life. I think of Bix Beiderbecke, and I hope I'm saying his name right, who was a, you know, brilliant player, but he was unfortunately an alcoholic, and he died not too far from where I am now, very, very young. So I guess Armstrong just had the whole package, and that did it.
Well, Bix Beiderbecke would have been known to the general public a lot, much more, if he had lived through the swing era, but he died in 1931, and he was only 28, and, you know, the quality of the liquor wasn't very good in the 20s, and unfortunately he was an alcoholic, but he was probably second to Louis Armstrong among cornet players and trumpeters in the 20s. He had a beautiful tone and had really advanced ideas. It would have been fascinating to hear what he would have done 10 years later.
And they, you know, it's funny because, you know, obviously Louis Armstrong was African-American and Bix was white, but they knew each other, right? And
Well, Louis Armstrong always got along with people from all races, and
and
when you're a great player and you see another great player, you know, Chan, you recognize it.
It doesn't.
And they even played together a little bit, but unfortunately, nothing was recorded.
That would have been interesting.
I know,
Scott. This has been absolutely great. I truly, truly appreciate it, and I wish you a lot of luck. What did you give the URL of your website? Please do, so if people want to visit and see what you got, that would be something that would be great.
Sure, yeah. Well, I try to keep the website a little entertaining too. It's my name, so it's scottyanow.com, so scottyanow.com. And if anyone wants to get in contact with me, my email is scottyanowjazz@yahoo.com.
Beautiful. Again, thank you very, very much. I truly appreciate it, and I wish you the best of luck.
Sure, thanks for having me, and, you know, thanks for doing what you can to help jazz. That's so important.
Take care.